I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Happy Mama Movement podcast. I'm Amy Taylor Cabaz, mama, journalist, coach, and founder of Mama Rising. This podcast is a space of community and collaboration. We gather stories of matrescence, motherhood, womanhood, and change told by our Mama Rising coaches and mothers around the globe, in the knowing that through our stories, we can begin to heal and change the way the world sees, values, and supports mothers everywhere. So, welcome to the Happy Mama Movement. Welcome back, mamas. Welcome to another episode of the Happy Mama Movement. Over the last few years, as I've continued to have the conversation of matrescence and motherhood with women around the world, I love this concept that I keep coming back to, that this experience of matrescence really is a spiritual opportunity. It's a chance for us to really redefine who we are, look at who we want to be, face ourselves in a whole new way. It's a core part of what I now teach in Mama Rising, and it's been a great comfort to me, and I think many of us, to realize that this is an opportunity for us to work on ourselves, even as we're trying to figure out how to be a mother as well, which is why I really wanted to speak to author Kelly Van Sant in today's episode. Kelly's book, Powerful Postpartum, is a book that really acknowledges this experience of postpartum and the opportunity that it brings in a spiritual and self-development way. She's also trained as a Vedic counselor and has studied graduate studies in marriage and family therapy, and joins me now. So thank you for being here and thank you for joining me, Kelly.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here and connect with you.
I love the way that you describe this experience of postpartum as a spiritual opportunity or a spiritual assignment. That's really what I want to explore with you today. But first, can you share with us how you got into this work?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'll take you way back. So my first career, believe it or not, was in luxury fashion in New York City, and I spent about a decade there. A friend of mine invited me on a spiritual retreat, and I had a blossoming, I had an opening, something changed, something happened, something shifted in my life through this experience. Not long after that, I moved away from the fashion industry, and I discovered floral design, of all things. Very strange, but it was it indicated some type of shift towards more feminine or more delicate aspects of myself, and it was undeniable. It sounded so strange to like leave this secure corporate job and do something creative, risky in that nature, but it was an undeniable calling, and I just followed it. Coming from fashion, I had a lot of clients actually that transferred into this industry, so it all worked out. But so that led me up to this moment of really discovering myself. I realized the potential in spiritual development and spiritual growth and learning and the practice and the knowledge. And I delved in, like I went into this deep dive, and I can't say that it, cured me of all suffering, but what it did is it reoriented me with a new way of sort of being in life. I just entered motherhood feeling like I had done all of this work, that I really understood myself. I was mature. I was confident. I had blossomed. And, I entered motherhood with this idea, like, oh, I've got this kind of thing. Well, Let me tell you, my baby was born. And I did not have anything. Like, I had nothing. I did not. I was shocked. Postpartum really left me shook. It was such a complete reorientation to life. And to me, what was most alarming is that I could not resonate with any of my spiritual studies. None of my teachers were landing in the same way as they once had. Part of that was most of them were either men, or if they were women, they were not talking about this phenomenon, this really, really powerful moment in life, which, of course, that led me on a personal path of further discovery. What is this? What is happening? How do we explain this? What is this powerful phenomenon? Because on one end, it felt so challenging. But on the other end, it felt so powerfully loving. It was expansive, like in all directions. So at that moment, I remember I had a conversation with a friend of mine who was involved with the meditation and spiritual studies alongside me. And I was explaining to him, you know, I'm just so spiritually flatlined. I'm so confused. And he said to me, well, your baby is your spiritual work right now. And I physically recoiled and I was so offended. I was like, no, you don't understand. This is something else. So I'll just cut to, it was probably 6 to 8 months after that I started to really get any clarity on what was going on. And the dots that I connected was all of the work I had been doing prior to motherhood was about coming to your truest, most authentic self. And this impermanence of the ego, this impermanence of persona, and connecting with this highest essence. And it finally dawned on me that that is exactly what was happening in motherhood, is that I was rediscovering my truest nature. It felt different from a traditional spiritual practice in the way that we think of a retreat or solitary meditation or learning, because it was totally experiential. Like, it put me in such a moment of service and practice and integration and embodiment of spirituality. It wasn't conceptual, right? It was experiential. So at that moment I woke up, I explained this to my husband, like, you know, I'm at risk of sounding like a crazy person. Here's what I think. He's like, well, you have a book, you have to write this. I don't consider myself even a writer, really. But I do consider myself a thinker, a creative thinker. So I knew I had strong ideas. So I started to put this together, and the book was born, and that just really initiated a further discovery into this field of postpartum studies, marriage and family therapy, Veda counseling. So it just continues to grow and evolve as all things do. There's no finish line. We just keep, you know, lifelong students, that sort of thing. So.
Wow. What I really want to go back to is the way that you said that in that moment, your spiritual teacher said, well, your baby is your spiritual assignment right now. And you had such a reaction. You said that you were offended. Like, it can't be that. Can we just talk about that for a moment? Because I remember feeling similarly, like, what, now my baby defines me? Now this is my work, or this is my assignment? It took me a while to understand and almost accept that that's what is happening. And I've heard that a lot in the different conversations the women I've supported over the years, that it comes as a shock that this might be the spiritual assignment, but also this not wanting to accept this or not seeing it for what it is. Can we explore that a little bit? Why is that, do you think? And what was that process for you like? Whereas you said it took 6 to 8 months for you to realize, oh, yes, okay, I understand this now.
Absolutely. I think there's multiple ways to look at it. I think one of which I mentioned is that we have an idea of what spiritual practice is, and we think that it is this very peaceful moment in solitude, a meditation, things like that. And what we forget is that you'd be hard-pressed to find a faith across the globe that does not highlight service as spirituality and the importance of practice. I can't remember who said it, and if I can find the quote, I'll send it to you, but it's something like, you know, women spend thousands of dollars to go to a retreat or practice yoga or do these things, and you sometimes overlook the repetitive tasks within your own home that feel really monotonous and meaningless, but that are sort of service-oriented and meditative in nature. Now, there's another thing that is happening, I think, which is part of that resistance that you mentioned. And I think that we are so accustomed to living a life of identity, a life of persona. We're always either presenting our image or defending the image of self. And that is just human nature. That is no criticism of anyone. But when we come in contact with an experience that really shows us the impermanence of that self, of that smaller self, of that egoic self, and we're connecting with something higher, it's like the ego gets threatened because it's losing its place of authority. So it's not uncommon that that would sort of whip up a storm of like a feral mind grasping to hold its place over us, because it's really all that we know, all that we can remember in our, at least in our conscious memory, is this way of existing. So there is a lot of resistance to the process. And that's another thing about the concept of spirituality, is that we have this idea that it looks one way. Anyone who has walked the path of know thyself, of self-discovery, of inner inquiry, knows that it can be sort of a, I hesitate to use the word grueling, but it's not always as seamless as we might like it to be, or we might want it to look. There are challenges, there are serious challenges. And so there is just, I think, a natural tendency to resist that moment of growth, to stay the same, to bounce back, to go backwards, to resume life that we know it. And I think that's part of the process. It's sort of like in the hero's journey. I don't know if you're familiar with that archetype. The first step is to like ignore the calling, to resist the calling, right, in the journey. And I think that sort of indicates what you're speaking of in terms of resistance.
Yes, exactly. I think so often we don't acknowledge in this experience of postpartum. And this is a perhaps too strong a word, but I think it is correct, that there is also a death of a part of yourself. There is a death of that ego self, perhaps, but it's also the ending of your maiden self. There's an ending of the independent self, perhaps the identity. For me, it was that extreme independent self where I can do anything by myself. I don't need anybody. Like there are endings and deaths in this new beginning as well. And I think there's resistance in that, in those moments as well.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think we don't talk enough about the loss, what you lose in motherhood. It's sort of taboo, or we're ashamed to admit that we lose that sense of autonomy, freedom, independence, that sort of thing. And as you're mentioning it, I'm just thinking of the chapters in the book. Chapters go resistance is a whole chapter, followed by love, which is a little more obvious. We expect the love. And then the very next chapter is loss. And it is important that we discover that we do, it does feel like a loss. But what I say to mothers all the time is any part of you that could be felt loss could never be the truth of who you are.
Oh, I love that, Kelly. Oh, that's given me goosebumps all down my body. Can you, for somebody who's listening, who the whole idea of a spiritual practice, even using these words, feels a bit out there, they haven't perhaps done much work around what this all means, can we just explore what that means, what you just said? Anything that is lost is not really who you are, is what I heard you say. So if somebody, this is new concepts, new ideas, could you explain that a little bit more? What do we mean by that?
Sure. Trying to think the best way to be as clear as possible. We all come to this earth in an original state, and we are divinely connected. We are totally connected with ourselves, our caregivers, and divinity. There is such a purity that lives within us, truly. Over time, we all develop sort of veils, layers, barriers, protectors that start to sort of cover that essence of who we are. Some of which just have to do with our experiences, our past, our conditioning, our families, our culture, our society. It just starts to build up. And we forget that we have that that beautiful state of original connection alive and within us at all times. The parts that build up over us, I guess those are the parts of self that are sort of impermanent. They're transitory in nature. They can shift, they can change, they can evolve, they can elevate. We can outgrow them. It's sort of like what the Vedics call the Maya. It's like the illusion of what is. And so it's not uncommon for those, for us to feel like those things are really permanent as a part of identity. It's who I am. It's how I was raised. It's my culture. But in truth, all of those things are malleable and can shift. And we know that because if those parts of ourselves that we see in motherhood can fall away and we don't cease to exist, then there has to be something else that's more permanent, right? There has to be something else underneath who we thought we were. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes beautiful sense. Thank you. It reminds me of earlier in our conversation, and I wrote this down, you said this period of postpartum is, and, you know, beyond postpartum as well. I mean, my eldest is 16 and I'm still realizing that I'm letting go of these layers of ego and identity. You said it's our opportunity to rediscover ourselves. And I thought in that moment, is it a rediscovering, or for some of us, it's a discovering for the very first time? And then the way you just described, there's this essence of us right from the very beginning. And so perhaps, and again, for many of the women I've heard over the years, this is the first time in their lives they've had this sense of meeting themselves in all ways, you know, facing the parts of themselves that come up when they're exhausted and overtired and angry at their child, facing different parts of themselves that they've never seen before or never been able to. So it's both a rediscovering, but also perhaps for many of us, a discovering for the very first time.
Absolutely. The reason I say rediscovering is because it's my belief that we do enter originally in that state. So when I say it's a remembering of that essence, but you're right. Some of the parts, like I'll say the outer parts, the shell, the barriers, the veils, some of those parts are so deeply unconscious to us that we see parts of ourselves that we didn't know were there, or we see parts of ourselves that we rather not be there. So we haven't. But that is the work. The baby has the way of just showing us all of it, exposing the full range of inner landscape. And what I say to moms is, when you see it, there's nothing to change. There's nothing to do. The whole objective is just to see it. The power is in the awareness. Once you can see these parts of your unconscious self or your hidden self or your shadow self, however you want to see it, once you see it, it just holds less charm over you because it's no longer in the unconscious patterning. It's brought into the light of consciousness. You become aware of it.
That's the confronting hard part, isn't it? That in this beautiful assignment of motherhood, where our children or child brings those parts of ourselves to the light, it is incredibly difficult to not meet that then with judgment, because we then not only have the uncomfortableness of seeing that part of ourselves so clearly, oh, so clearly, they bring it so clearly, but also we have the, again, I guess, the identity of who do we think we should be as a good mother. So good mothers don't do that. A good mother doesn't yell. A good mother is always calm and present for her child. A good mother is definitely not the person I'm seeing in the mirror today. So to hear you say, and I totally agree, this is what the assignment is that when we have these parts of ourselves come into the light, is to see it and try not to judge it. That's probably the biggest assignment of them all for me personally, is I have worked for so many years on seeing those parts of myself come up, but oh my gosh, to not sit in judgment of myself in those moments, that is the hard part. So how have you, as a mama first and then with your clients and mamas, how have you navigated the judgment and shame or feelings around those parts of yourself that have come up to be brought to such light?
Yeah, this is such an important topic because the guilt or the phenomenon of mom guilt is, I find, quite universal. It's quite powerful. It's quite debilitating. And there is this sense of harsh criticism of self in motherhood. Part of that is because we sense the weight of the responsibility. Let's be honest. We know what we're doing is really important and we want to get it right. Okay, so let's just table that for a moment. But the other thing to consider is exactly what you mentioned, this idealized image of what a good mother is, or this ought to be mother, which can come from our familial conditioning, our cultural conditioning. We're bombarded with imagery around what a good mother is. It also can be part of the expectations we bring into motherhood about ourselves. My teacher, these are words I live by. My teacher explained to me once, the root of most conflict is in the gap between expectation and reality. So we're all going to come into motherhood with an idealized image of motherhood, and there's going to be a gap between what's in reality and what we thought this would be, right? So a lot of times we spend a lot of time in that gap, and it takes some time to start to narrow those two walls to meet. So one of the ways that I like to work with moms on this topic is to really break this down, and it's a very simple practice. And it goes story, meaning, conditioning. So there's some story that's got you in disturbance. You can determine what meaning that you're attributing to that. And then you can get down to the root of conditioning. Conditioning usually has something to do with image or sense of approval from someone else or for yourself. So that's when we get down to good mother. So that's a way to sort of exercise or reconsider what your concept of good mother really is and how you're holding yourself to those standards. I'll tell you an anecdotal story as well. This might help to clarify. So with the birth of my second child, I was seeing a psychotherapist, and I asked, do you do dream work? I had a disturbing dream last night. She said, yeah. So I said, I met this really unruly woman in my dream, and she told me I had done something so horrible that I deserved to die by my own hand, and I had to drink poison. And I didn't know exactly what I had done, but I felt like I had done something terrible. But I escaped, and I ran down this long pier, and I jumped into a body of water, and I swam away and escaped to an island. And I'm not a strong swimmer, so this stood out to me like, wow, you really survived here. And she said, you know what? Tell me that story again, but this time you're the unruly woman. You're the inner critic, and you're the one receiving your own criticism. You're punishing yourself by your own hand. Oh. And as I said, yeah, so it's similar in witnessing those parts of self. When you can see that you're the critic and you're receiving your own criticism, and you can just hold those two pieces in your awareness, it just dissolves a little bit, just takes the temperature down a little bit.
Do you speak to that inner critic in those moments that you catch yourself judging? Do you speak back to her in those moments? What would that look like on a very, very practical day-to-day moment for a mama?
I don't speak to her, but I call her out. I see you there. I see you. There you are. There you are again. Yeah, it's just noticing. It's catching it. It's just catching it. For me, that's powerful enough. It's just not letting it run in the unconscious narrative on repeat. Is bringing it to the forefront. There she is. There's that critic. Do I have to do that to myself in this moment? Mm-hmm. The other thing that helps is realizing when you become a mom, we always think mom is the teacher, mom is the nurturer, mom is the, you are just as much a student as you are you are learning. If you were a teacher, how would you speak to a student? Great job. Try again. Do better next time. Reflect on your mistakes. Yeah, those sorts of things. It helps add some objectivity into the narrative.
I understand that your next book, which you're almost there finished with, is Your Baby, Your Guru. Is that what it's called?
Your Baby, Your Guru. Yes. Yeah, so this came from the eliminated chapter in the first book, Powerful Postpartum. And it talks about all the ways that we learn from our babies, that we grow through our babies. Yeah. And that's the other thing is when you're going through this process and you're developing and you're seeing all these parts of self, watch how your baby loves you so beautifully and unconditionally through this, never keeping score. All they want is you, and you're they see you in the total purity and beauty of who you are. And you can use that approach too, right? Like, I wouldn't see myself like my baby sees me.
Yes. I love that. We often talk in my work in Mama Rising around the concept of the mother's unconditional love as well. So flipping that the other way, not only does your baby love you no matter how many mistakes you make today, but also I never truly understood the concept of unconditional love, you know, in terms of I understood it theoretically, but I didn't ever really know what that meant until I became a mother. Because now I can look at my children and know that if they are in a rage, they've made a mistake, there's anything going on, I know that's not who they are in their very core. And I can hold space for those emotions, and I can meet it with forgiveness and compassion and all of that. And when I realize that, oh, that's what I could do for myself in those moments, that was, again, that's just given me goosebumps. That was probably one of the biggest spiritual assignments of motherhood, was that if I can love them through that prickly outside mistake part that's just shown up, and know that who they are at the core is something else, then maybe I can do that for myself.
It's sort of, yeah, I agree. And it's like, that is how the divine sees you, through all your imperfection, your entirety of self, just held in complete and total love. And when I do think that's part of the assignment, is that we're so connected with our children, and we do learn this unconditional love. And when we can take that a step further and use that within ourselves, connect with that self-compassion. Self-compassion is like the core, the root of all compassion, really. When you can hold yourself in that compassion, you see yourself in others, and you see others in yourself. It's like the namaste, right? I see divine in me, sees the divine in you. And you, it has a way of just broadening your perspective, neutralizing, connecting. It's really powerful. I agree.
So for a mama who's listening to this, and perhaps this is almost one of her first entries into this conversation, if you were to speak to her about this opportunity that she now has, and reassure her that what is showing up is ready to be seen, what would you say? And the reason why I ask that is, again, I'm just putting myself into the shoes of so many women I've heard from over the years, who really, it's confronting and scary to be faced with so much, so much at the same time of trying to figure out how to just be a mum and keep your baby alive. So I wonder if we could finish, Kelly, with what would you say to her who is really starting to realize this is a big assignment and there's lots of growth and self-work to do here, but she's also pretty exhausted and overwhelmed as it is? How can we reassure her that this is exactly what is meant to happen, and this is part of it? What would you say?
I cannot sympathize enough with the moms who are just really in the midst of it. And it is tremendous. It's tremendous in the amount of personal growth, but also in the amount of work and service. And it's just all encompassing, all consuming. And I do just so tenderly connect with where a woman is in that moment of her life. So this is not meant to be an added assignment, extra work, any additional effort. To me, this is integrally built into this process. It's only a shift in perspective. It only requires a shift in perspective. There's nothing extra that you have to do other than to look, rather than looking away from the experience, to look toward the experience. If I have time, I'd love to read a little poem that I have in this book. It's in the chapter Time, which is seeing that this doesn't happen overnight. This is, as you know, a very slow and gradual process. And the poem says, "Would you ask the caterpillar to morph overnight? Would you ask the spider to spin in daylight? Would you ask a tulip to bloom with the moon? or a snowflake to fall in the middle of June. If you peel back the petals of a lily too soon, will she not bruise and perish in ruin? So take your time.
Wow.
Just take your time.
Oh, that's absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much. I have so enjoyed this conversation with you, your energy and the way you speak about this. There is something incredibly soothing in your words and in your approach as well. And I know that all the mamas listening to this would be feeling that as well. I can't wait to read your next book as well. We might have to have you back on.
Thank you so much, Kelly,
for your wisdom and your kindness.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the tremendous work that you're doing. It's just so necessary and so needed. So I'm thrilled to connect.
Thank you. Thanks, as always, for being a part of our Global Matrescence community. Please take a moment and make sure you're subscribed to this podcast in your podcast player, so you can always be notified of our next episode. And if you would like to work with a coach on your own experience of matrescence, please go to mamarising.net and explore our directory of phenomenal coaches, workshop leaders, space holders and facilitators around the globe. You can also explore our Global Matrescence Foundation and consider donating so a mama in need can access the support of one of our coaches and still ensure that our coaches receive the income and support they need so they can continue to work in this way. And finally, if you would like to be a coach, a facilitator and a matrescence activist in your own community, jump on our wait list for our next intake of the Mama Rising Facilitator Training at mamarising.net. Thank you for being here and being part of this movement. Until next week, bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.